Part F. Non-conformity. Jesus disobeys the Sabbath laws, interrupts a funeral, and refuses attempts to make him an earthly king.
Isaiah bewailed the fact that no one would believe God's servant when he came on earth. Rejection and contempt would be his lot. Isaiah's prophecies were well fulfilled. However many signs Jesus performed, only a few accepted what he said. Others, for what they feared might be the price they'd have to pay if they spoke publicly in favor of the Lord, kept very quiet. They well might be expelled from synagogue. The praise of men meant more to them than did the promptings of their consciences. Their eyes, the prophet had predicted, would stay closed. Nor would they turn to him for help and health. That illness was a punishment for sin was an opinion that many held.
When Jesus passed a blind man in the street,
the friends who followed him were quick to ask, "Who sinned? Are this man's parents both to blame? Or is the fault his own?" "It matters not," the Lord replied. "Through him the power of God is now to be revealed. While it is day, I must continue the work that I was sent to do. It is my Father's work. The night will come when no work will be done. I am the world's great light while I am here." Then, spitting on the ground, he made a lump of clay and spittle, which he smeared upon the blind man's eyes. "Now go and wash," he said. "Go to the pool of Siloam. Wash there." So this the blind man did, and then came back, and for the first time ever, he could see. It was a Sabbath day when this took place, and neighbors thought they recognized the man as someone they'd seen begging in the streets. "But he was blind," they said, "and now he's not." Some others disagreed. "No, it's not him. It's just someone who vaguely looks like him." Confronted and close questioned, it was clear he was the blind man with the begging bowl, familiar to them all. "Yes, I am he," he said. "How come that you can see?" they asked. His explanation did not satisfy, so off they took him to the Pharisees.
"A man named Jesus smeared my eyes with clay and told me I must wash it off at once with water from the pool of Siloam."
"A man who breaks the Sabbath isn't from God," most Pharisees declared. But others asked, "How can a sinner be responsible for something so miraculous as this?" They turned and faced the man who had been cured. "Well, what have you to say about the one who gave you sight?"
"Oh, that he's a prophet, sure,"
the man with certainty replied. The Jews began to think his blindness was a sham. Perhaps he'd been deceiving them for years. His parents then were called for questioning. "Is this the son whom you say was born blind?" They both agreed. "How is it that he sees?" The parents were unwilling to reply. If they declared that Jesus was the Christ, or even hinted that they thought as much, they knew they'd be expelled from synagogue. On this, the Pharisees were all agreed. "He is our son, and from birth he was blind. We do not know how this has come about. He is of age, so ask him to explain." Thus, for a second time, their son was called. "Give praise to God," they said, "and only him. We've checked, and we are sure the man you met is certainly a sinner."
"I don't know whether or not he sins. All that I know is that I was blind, and now I'm not, that's all."
"What did he do to you to make you see?"
"I've told you that. You didn't want to know. Why do you need to hear it all again? Perhaps you're keen to follow him yourselves and join the ones who are his special friends."
The Pharisees rained curses on his head.
You are the one seeking discipleship. The prophet Moses is the one we know. God spoke directly to him, that's the truth. Where is this fellow from? We've no idea.
Well, fancy that. You don't know where he's from. We know that God hears not the men who sin, and listens only to his worshippers and those who do his will.
Good men he hears. I do not think that since the world began has anyone born blind been made to see. Whenever was there such a miracle? The man who did this thing must be from God, for otherwise he would be powerless.
Your blindness proves that you were born in sin, and yet you have the nerve to bandy words with us.
With that, the Pharisees forbade his ever entering a synagogue again. When Jesus heard he'd been cast out, he went and spoke to him. The Son of Man, he said, do you believe in him?
Who's he? Please tell me, sir. I'd like to know his name.
I am the one, said Jesus. Whereupon the man fell to his knees and worshipped him. The Pharisees were witnesses and heard the Lord proclaim, I'm here to help the blind to see and show the ones that claim to see that they are blind.
We take it you mean us, the Pharisees remarked.
If you were blind, then you would have no guilt. But since you claim to see, your blindness and your guilt are both revealed. That seemed at last to silence them. Jesus was in Judea at one time, walking with his disciples by his side, and followed, as was usual, by a crowd. When they approached the city gates of Nain, the gates were opened, and another crowd, part of a funeral procession, met the travellers. The body of a man was being taken to a burial ground, and weeping inconsolably, his mum was walking by those carrying his corpse. Perhaps the chance encounter of two crowds flowing in contrary directions brought the bearers to an unexpected halt. The woman was a widow, and the corpse had been her only son. With just a glance, the Lord knew of her plight, and overcome with pity at the future that she faced, he spoke to her at once. No need to cry, he said, and quickly touched the passing pall. At my command, you must get up, young man, was his decree. And sure enough, the man immediately sat upright and began to speak coherently. His mother stood rooted and open-mouthed. Astonishment, a kind of holy fear, soon seized them all. Mourners and travellers alike began to whisper that they'd seen the work of God. A prophet has come here to show God's power to help his people, they proclaimed. The name and fame of Jesus passed from mouth to mouth, was spreading everywhere. The fame of Jesus as a healer spread. He was presented constantly by those whose sufferings seemed well beyond all hope. The man they brought to him one day was blind and totally incapable of speech. Almost at once he could both see and speak. The crowd were stunned and totally amazed by all that they were witnessing. No one had ever done such miracles before, so men began to claim him as Messiah and call him Son of David, but not all. Some scribes who'd come down from Jerusalem to keep an eye on Jesus and the crowds contended that the man had been possessed by demons, and Beelzebub it was, the prince of demons, who had shooed them off. The miracle was easy to explain, for Jesus and the devil were in league. But Jesus sensed their whispered commentary and called them to his side. Tell me, he said, your own friends cast out devils, do they not? Perhaps they use the methods you ascribe to me.
Do ask them their opinions. They'll give you their best judgment, I'm sure. The question that I put to you is this. If demons have possession of a soul, why would the devil want to throw them out? To do that would imply that Satan's realm has no cohesion. It is breaking up. I see no evidence of that above. Oh no, the devil's guards were put to flight by something stronger than themselves, as if they had been soldiers fully armed who'd met their match and fled the scene in disarray. And if it's by God's power I banish them, heaven's kingdom, then, lies at your very door. Assembling the 12, the Lord began explaining to them what they must do next, and from a hilltop where he'd spent the night in prayer, commissioned them to go and preach. They all must work in pairs and travel light. Tell the lost sheep of Israel's scattered race that heaven's kingdom is now close at hand. As yet, the time is some way off to preach to other folk than Jews. One day my word will reach the ears of everyone. For now, they would not understand, and you would be in danger. There's no point in giving pearls to hogs or sacred things to senseless dogs. The time for Gentiles and Samaritans will come. For now, talk to your countrymen. And so I'll give you power to heal the sick, and every unclean spirit will give way at your command. In spite of your good works, always refuse whatever gifts may be on offer. What you have received, you got for nothing. You must give without a thought of recompense. Do not take gold or coin of any kind to fill your money belts. No bags, no extra tunics or a staff, no second pair of sandals. Leave behind those things that any careful Jew would take when he leaves home. The laborer deserves his food, and that will be enough for you. And when you reach a village or a town, first find some house that is respectable and stay there. Do not move until you leave. If you're welcome properly, say, "Peace be with this house." But if your message should fall on deaf ears, shake off the dust that's on your feet as you depart, and I tell you that on the day of judgment you will see a lighter sentence for Gomorrah or for Sodom than for those who threw you out. You go like sheep into a world of wolves. Be wise as serpents and as innocent as doves. So few and so immense a task. But Jesus had a parable which tells how powerful a tiny thing may be. The parable of the mustard seed. The mustard seed is a very small seed. It's not just small, it's very small indeed. But if you plant it, to your surprise, it will very soon increase in size, become a shrub, become a tree, and spread its green leaves gloriously, and happy birds will be its guests, and chatter there, and build their nests. Jesus, in search of respite, went to Tyre, and taking refuge in a stranger's house, hoped to shake off the crowds that followed him so unremittingly. But he was seen and recognized by someone. She'd a child who had an evil spirit troubling her. Born in Phoenicia, in the Syrian part, this woman was a Greek and not a Jew. Nevertheless, she begged for Jesus' help. "Lord, drive this demon from my suffering child." But Jesus would not budge. He had come first to bring his message to his countrymen. We let the children eat all that they want before we start to toss food to the dogs, he said. "Yes," was her quick reply. "But Lord, do not the pups that lie about their feet lap up the children's crumbs?" At this riposte, the heart of Jesus melted. "Go and see," he said. "The demon now has left the girl." So she went home and found her happy child safe in her bed, the evil spirit gone. They were about to hold one of the three great celebrations of the Jewish year. The Feast of Tabernacles was at hand. They would again remind themselves of how they'd wandered homeless in the wilderness. Jerusalem would be a seething mass of worshippers, all out to make the most of the rejoicing that the days would bring. So, what an opportunity, they urged, for Jesus openly to show his power. Some of his relatives joined in the cry that he should go along and advertise himself, accompanied by those whom he had taught or cured or made disciples of. But he replied, "My time has not yet come. The world hates me because I demonstrate that there is evil at its heart. But you may go. The time is not yet ripe for me." All left him then alone in Galilee and headed for Judea and the feast. But Jesus had intended all the time to make his own way to Jerusalem. He did not want to go accompanied by crowds of followers or those who wished by revolution or by violent means to make him king or leader of the state. His aims were different. So when he went, a solitary figure, halfway through the celebrations, no one noticed him, till he stood up within the temple walls and spoke and taught as only he could teach. In spite of pressure from the Pharisees, he went on speaking in the treasury. "I am the one who brings the light to you. If you would leave the darkness, follow me." The Pharisees' rebuttal came at once. "How can we trust such nonsense? For you speak without support, all on your own behalf, with neither man nor scripture backing you." "You do not know from where I come," he said, "nor who it is that sent me, but I know. My Father, he will testify for me. Your law acknowledges two witnesses to be enough. You should be satisfied." Immediately the Pharisees spoke up, "Where is this Father?
Well, we must question him.
If you knew me and knew my origin, you'd know my Father too, for we are one." Still no one dared put a hand on him, and he continued teaching every day. The listeners could not believe their ears. "How is it that this man can talk like this? He's never had a rabbi's tutelage." "If I were speaking for myself," he said, "it would be clear to anyone who sought to know that I was trying to impress, forging a reputation for myself. This is not so. My teaching is not mine, and my own status is not my concern. My tasks are for the one by whom I'm sent. His glory and his honor and his truth. And that's why you can trust in what I say. You have the law from Moses, isn't that so? But you do not obey it when it suits you to do otherwise. I broke the law. I healed a sick man on a Sabbath day. And now you are intent on killing me." Their catcalls drown him out. Some yelled aloud, "Go home! You're a head case! Who would want to see you dead?" "Well, Moses gave you strict instructions that you circumcise all men. You circumcise upon a Sabbath day, so that this law of Moses be upheld. Yet thus you break the Sabbath ordinance, that no work should be done. Now here am I, who healed a man one Sabbath, and you all declared it was a marvel. On that day, a man who had been suffering was cured. For that, I am condemned. So tell me why." Opinions were divided. There were some inclined to favor him, spoke of him well. Others declared that it had been foretold false prophets would appear, and he was one. He should be stopped from leading men astray, and Israel must be rid of him. Days passed, and Jesus could be witnessed many times within the temple, speaking openly. "But why is this allowed?" some people asked. "Isn't this the fellow that they're trying to stop?"
It could be that they know he is the Christ, and for the moment are not telling us. However, people say that when Christ comes, no one will recognize his origins. As far as this man is concerned, it's clear, both from his accent and his dialect, that he's from Galilee. That hardly fits.
Oh, yes, you may well know my place of birth, said Jesus. Not my origin, not that. I'm not here on my own authority. I'm not self-appointed. I was sent by one whom you know not, who is all truth, all justice, and all hope. I know him well, and he knows me.
At last it was too much, and officers went in to silence him, but he eluded them. Meanwhile, the crowds remained confused and in two minds. Some said no Christ could ever demonstrate more signs that he had come from heaven than Jesus did. The only word from him was that he'd stay a little longer and then disappear. And when that happened, none could follow him.
He's off to the diaspora, they said, and means to take this message to the Greeks.
Then, on the final Sabbath of the feast, the most important day, the Lord stood up and in the temple challenged those who heard, "If any thirst, then they should come to me. Then from their hearts will flow those living streams which Scripture promises." Here he foresaw the Holy Spirit's lighting up the world, surging with power and peace and love and hope. All that would come when he'd been glorified. The temple guards received a dressing down. Why was it that you did not bring him in? That was the question that was put to them.
But no one ever spoke like him before. This Jesus is a very special man, was all they could reply.
So, you as well. You too have been misled. You too are damned, just like the crowd out there. What do they know of prophets' lives or of Jehovah's law? Do scribes and Pharisees believe in him? Of course they don't.
But as they turned away, a Pharisee named Nicodemus spoke. He'd had a secret meeting with the Lord.
Does our law recommend that we should judge a man without first sifting evidence and listening to what he has to say?
The fellow's Galilean, is he not? That's proof enough. Go do your own research. No prophet ever came from Galilee, nor ever will.
Thus, for the Pharisees, the case was closed,